Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian, and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's guest is professional runner Danny Jones. Danny and I were teammates at the University of Colorado Boulder, and while at the University of Colorado Boulder, Danny was a 12-time All-American and 4-time NCAA champion. She went on to sign a professional contract with New Balance right out of college during COVID and has become an 8-time qualifier for the USATF Championships, including a silver medalist at the 2025 NACAC Championships. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Danny. All right, Danny, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast.
Thanks, Maddie. Thanks for having me.
This is such a treat. We got to catch up on the phone yesterday, and now we're getting to record a podcast together.
No, we just can't get enough. An hour on the phone, an hour FaceTime.
Well, I'm so excited to have you on because a while ago I put out a survey for who people wanted to hear from, and your name came up a ton. And so I'm really excited to have you on. I know a lot of people are looking forward to hearing from you.
Oh, that makes me happy.
Yeah. And Danny and I go way back. I think, Danny, you're probably my longest teammate ever because you were a freshman when I was a fifth year at CU. So we overlapped for 1 year and then we were together for 5 years or 4 years on Team Boss.
I know. I always think that we went to college, like all the way through college together.
Me too. Yeah. So we've trained together for a long time. And I feel like those years in between college and pro, like we would always catch up and run. So yeah, we go way back and have so much overlap in our running career, which is so fun.
Yeah. A lot of miles run together, especially being like the 1500 runners at CU.
Yeah. We took our easy runs seriously, which I definitely want to talk about today because for me, that made a huge difference. Yes. Okay. Well, we have so many conversations over so many hundreds of miles, and you and I have talked about nutrition a ton. So I'm excited to dive into some of those topics, but I want to just start with having you tell us a little bit about how you got into running. How did you find running? When did you realize it was something that you were passionate about?
Yeah. I mean, I come from like a pretty, I'd like gas my family up, but I have a pretty athletic family, and yeah, both my parents ran in college. My sister ran in college. I have a lot of cousins that play college basketball and played basketball overseas. Yeah, so it was just kind of like a given, not to run, but just to do something. And I feel like the deal was always like you play a sport or you get a job. And I was like, sport sounds good. So I thought that I was like that classic case of like I just thought I was going to take soccer all the way to college. And then I ran one track season before high school and just fell in love with it. And yeah, my parents both ran in college, so I think I just felt, they never forced me to do it, but I think I just felt more connected with them doing, like, running, and yeah, it just felt, that transition from soccer to track was really, really easy for me, and it was just really, I just love everyone that, the people in running are just my favorite people, and I found home in that right away, I feel like.
Yeah, it's funny how many runners find running through soccer. And like for me personally, it was mostly just realizing I wasn't actually good at soccer. I was just good at running. But I feel like you have that like very athletic background. Did you do any other sports besides soccer?
Yeah, I did everything. My mom would just put me in any league like available. All boys, baseball, basketball, soccer. We played some like recreational tennis. I wasn't like in like a good team or anything. But yeah, kind of anything I could stick my nose in. I think I just like the competitiveness, and I probably was best at soccer because of running. So then I like stuck with that. I was never a good basketball player.
Well, that explains why you were so good at all the Team Boss training camp sports.
Yeah, no, the one sport we played on Team Boss was volleyball, and that was the one sport I played. Made me so upset.
But I feel like your athletic skills really carried over.
Enough. Not enough to be drafted early on in the pick, but
you're looking at the last pick here, so it's okay. So you found running, it sounds like, a little bit later, like similar to me, a little later in high school after you'd been doing some other sports. And the high school that you were at is kind of a powerhouse for running. So what was that transition into running at a high school like that like? And when did you kind of realize, oh, I could be really good at this?
Yeah, I was in Phoenix and we started out, I lived like 45 minutes outside of Phoenix in like a smaller town. And my mom we kind of decided to go to Desert Vista because running kind of started to click for me a little bit just like right before. And I mean, it's a good school, so she wanted me to go to the better school, but then it also just worked out that it was really good athletics there. So I feel like it just going there kind of like helped me take it more, like take it to the next level, just because I was so early in it. But yeah, it was fun having, I've always just been on a big team though. And I feel like that's not always the same experience for everyone. I had like, I mean, you were probably similar. I had like 40, 50 girls for just on a cross country team, which is like unheard of for a lot of high schools, but it was like a blast that way. And I'm always like super impressed with people who can like, they get through high school cross country being on like really, really tiny teams. And I just feel like it was really easy for me to be motivated. It's hard for me to like give myself credit because I had like such a community in like cross country and drag, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely helps to be surrounded by people who care about the sport and who love running. I think that was my experience in high school. We had like 80 or 90 kids on the team when I was there. So yeah, probably about the same amount of girls to run with. And everyone was just like, it was such a like family. Like everyone was so close. We did so many things together. It was just so much fun. And I feel like that really helps bring out that side of running where you're like, this is fun and something I care about.
Right. Yeah. And like going from a team sport, transitioning into an individual sport, I didn't feel loneliness in that at all. Whereas like, I think some people do, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And again, like growing up in a family where running was a part of your family's history, both your parents ran in college, your sister's a runner. What was that like for you in terms of your environment around fueling? What was that like in your family growing up?
My family always like jokes that they went to Indiana State and like going running in the 90s in college, I think it's just such a different experience. They used to say like they'd take the bus out to all the meets and they'd get $7, you know, for the whole weekend and they'd spend it at McDonald's. And my dad's PR in the 800, he ran like 151 off of like a Diet Coke and a donut or something. So it's just like, I don't think they ever, they didn't really think about fueling, I guess, which like is good and bad probably. But I had really good influence in my coaching in high school in that I wasn't allowed to come to practice without my watch and without, well, running shoes, obviously, but then chocolate milk I had.
Wow.
So if you showed up with two of the three, you including the chocolate milk, which doesn't feel like a big deal, but to my coaches it was. And I feel like that instilled even just like the habit of eating something immediately after. I had that really early on, and I know that's not true for a lot of people, and I'm really grateful for that being kind of forced on me early on.
Yeah, it sounds like you grew up in an environment where there was no pressure to avoid certain foods. Like it was very just like, eat what you want to eat, fuel your body. And you were also on a team where fueling was prioritized, which is so important. And I'm curious, do you feel like that was a little bit protective in terms of your relationship with food, kind of transitioning from high school into college?
Yeah, I think it just was, I just didn't know anything different. And I'd never restricted or felt guilty about eating, which is like I didn't realize it then, but like now I kind of know like what a privilege that was, to not feel that way in high school and growing up. Yeah, I think it just instilled really good habits in me. And then also just seeing the other side of that it felt abnormal to me as opposed to it, you know, seeming like a normal or like something you have to do as like a runner.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And also why I think learning how to fuel from a young age is so important, because like you just said, not only just taking care of your body, but also recognizing that not fueling should be considered abnormal. It shouldn't be considered like the norm or the thing that you should be doing. So I love that you had that ability to recognize like, oh, that's different. That's probably not something I should be doing.
Right, right. Or even just like not even knowing if it's right or wrong, but being like, this has worked for me. And I don't need to change what I'm doing.
Yeah, for sure. And so you ended up having a really fantastic running career in high school. And then you ended up at CU, University of Colorado, Boulder with me. So what was that transition like for you? This is something I talk about with a lot of people, just transitioning from like living at home and being around your family to moving to a new state and being on your own. What was that transition like for you?
I think it was like as smooth as it could have been. I mean, I know, I think like everyone, I like remember when my parents like drove away and you're like, oh shit, like they're not coming back. And just like doing life, everything in between practice and school with like your freshman class becomes like kind of your family, and there's like good and bad and all of that. I do think college athletics makes that transition so much easier. I always like tell high school athletes that they simply, this is exaggerated, but they just don't let you fail.
Yeah. I think
like a ton of support, and especially a school like CU and the athletic department, you know, on the academic side and on just like getting through life on your own side. And then obviously it just like going to practice and stuff creates such a like good schedule, and just, I don't know, you're not just like thrown into the deep end, you know, like we had a lot to do and we were busy, so there wasn't a lot of time to like mess around or like spend your time doing the wrong things. So, but yeah, that whole being with your teammates constantly, there is like another layer of like comparison where you're like, what are they eating for dinner? And like, I have to race them for this spot, this last spot on the cross country team. And what are they doing that's like better or worse than, you know? And I had to learn to like put the blinders on, and I never needed to do that before.
Yeah, totally. That's a really good point. Two kind of things about collegiate athletics, depending on the school you go to, of course, like we were very fortunate at CU, they really support athletes and they give you a lot of resources to help you succeed because they want you there. Being able to have access to like tutoring programs and to the dining halls and the athletics specific dining halls, like it's just a very unique situation where there's a lot of people keeping track of you and providing resources, and you sort of have that cohort that you're moving through the freshman year with, you know, similar to people who aren't in sports who are in the dorms. Like that was my experience since I wasn't running freshman year. The people in my dorms were all kind of like my little group of people that I would hang out with all the time. So you kind of find it in college and you find that support system. But yeah, it definitely can be a little bit of an adjustment at first. And then speaking of adjustments, you mentioned noticing, finding yourself kind of in a new environment with eating and comparing yourself to your other teammates. When do you feel like that first started, and how did you learn to navigate that temptation to compare your plate to your teammates?
Yeah, I think I sadly had some teammates that, you know, they came from less healthy environments or like restrictive environments, or even like transferred in from schools that had those kind of environments. And so it was a lot of like protecting yourself and like trusting that fueling is the right decision and it's going to get me, especially long term, where I need to be. But then also like finding, I think it was cool that I felt like by the time we had all graduated, we had kind of pulled each other out of that and created this good environment where no one felt the need to restrict. We all kind of like grew up together, and I don't know, it ended up being like the best case scenario, which I know isn't always how it goes, but that was really, really cool to see, and it became like a non-issue by the end. But yeah, again, obviously it can go in a lot of different directions.
I definitely think that especially when you're in a new environment and you're just feeling like unsure of yourself, it's human instinct to look at what other people are doing as like a guide for like, okay, I'm new here. What do people do? Oh, that's what you're doing. But I think being able to recognize that, that doesn't look like a lot of food, or that doesn't look like enough for me personally, and being able to separate what other people are doing from what you're doing, it's really hard, but it's something that I think gets better with time. And the older you get, the more mature you get, it gets easier. That's not to say that it goes away. And I think for me personally, in that experience, looking back, when I chose to fuel myself how I wanted to be fueled, despite what other people around me were doing, I found that at the end of my 5 years at CU, I was honestly kind of the last one standing from my class. I was the one who ended up seeing improvement instead of a decline in performance. I was staying healthier. I was running better and feeling better. And unfortunately, that wasn't the reality for a lot of the other athletes that were in my cohort. And I think that's an important experience to highlight too, like the longevity in sport. And I think that was kind of the same for your class. Like a lot of you who prioritized health have gone on and are still running, like Sage, who just made the world team and for the first time and made the 800 final. Like all these things wouldn't be possible if you didn't start realizing there was that fork in the road. You can go one of two ways.
Right. And I think it's really difficult in the moment to see how unsustainable that is when you're not fueling correctly, and how much, even if you feel that you could get more out of yourself in that moment, it's never going to like propel you into the long term, obviously. So,
and I think it's especially hard when the people that you're looking at who you know aren't making the best decisions are running faster than you.
Yeah. And that's what's like really, it's really awful actually how that is how it works. Like how you get kind of like that immediate success and then it can go from that to just not being able to run anymore, which is just so sad. Like I feel like just getting a taste of like seeing what your body can do and then have it like taken away possibly permanently is just so brutal. And I've seen it happen over and over again in college and in high school. And I know that there are girls who love the sport as much as I did and were probably more talented than I was that would love to be in my position, who either, you know, maybe weren't feeling right or were overtraining, that just don't get the same opportunities that I now get.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's so hard in that one moment to make that decision. But it's not just about like that one decision. It's about every little decision along the way that puts you on the path towards health and longevity in the sport. And it's so, so hard when you're a young runner to separate that long-term picture from the short-term. Because of course, when you get to college, you want to be successful. You want to immediately contribute to the team. You want to sort of prove your worth there. Like that was something that I really struggled with, was trying to prove that like I belonged on the team after walking on. And so it's tempting to do what other athletes are doing to try to get better. But I think that's where like younger athletes, younger me, younger you, it's helpful to hear these kinds of stories because it helps you realize in the moment, like, okay, maybe I get beat this season, but what about the next season? And you have 3 seasons every year in collegiate athletics and you have potentially 5 years. That's 15 opportunities to run well. And you don't want to throw away 14 of those opportunities for one.
Yeah. And people forget too, that like the older you get, the better you get. And there's no world where I would have wanted to see my career end at 18, knowing that I had 10 more years ahead of me that were even better, you know. And yeah, people, what is it, that women peak around age 30 or something like that?
Yeah.
Like really, really cool. But it like takes a lot to like make it that far. And it's a lot on your body. So treating it the right way is just so important.
Yeah. For sure. And you brought up a point earlier about overtraining. We sort of touched on this at the beginning of the podcast, but you and I would go off on our own on easy run days and run easy. For anyone listening, tell them about the importance of that, like for you personally, for performance and recovery.
First of all, you were like such a good influence on me. And I truly don't know if I would have had that clarity without you to do what I needed to do. So thank you for that.
Danny.
Yeah, sometimes it does take just one other person to like get you there. Listening to your body and doing the, like taking those steps, even in the moment, if you like have a lot of, I have like pride about that, right? Where like I want to run, be in the front all the time. And I want to like prove that I can run hard every day. But I know to like make the important moments count, I have to, you know, let go of that pride. And yeah, I tell people all the time that, or like, I guess this is a Mark Wetmore saying, but you have to be, or say that I'm confident enough to not have to run that hard every day, or to not have to prove myself every day to be a good runner. And I think that's true about, especially being like a good team, like CU, there's so much talent and so many good people. I just would tell myself, like, I don't need to do that to be good. And that sounds like kind of cocky, but it's like, it is true. You can't just kill yourself to get up there. You know, it has to be mindful and it has to be calculated. And especially at altitude too, those like running easier, it just made a world of difference. And you're still, I just think you're obviously getting more out of those runs too. You're not going into this deficit every time you run. You're shaking out your legs and working at a lower heart rate, which is also important. And yeah, all of it, I just have to remember big picture, which is really, really hard to do. It's easier said than done.
Totally. And yeah, you brought up such a good point there that like, there's a purpose for easy runs, and it's not to run as hard as you can. Like, that's the purpose of a workout day. That's the purpose of a long run day. And I shouldn't even say those days you should be running as hard as you can, right? There's a calculated effort on those days for sure. But for easy run days, the purpose isn't to gain fitness. It's to give your body that space to recover. And like, you know, we worked on this a lot with Joe, where like, when you're able to run easy at a certain heart rate percentage, you actually increase the range of your like of your heart rate in general. So you're actually improving, by improving the lower end of your aerobic system, you're improving the upper end, which I never understood, but I just knew that I felt way better if I ran slow on easy runs than if I ran really hard with the 10K girls who ran so fast every day. I would do that for a week and I was dead by the weekend. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. So it is just listening to your body too.
Well, also what we were doing is just more enjoyable. You know? Yeah. Like, it was just nice that we could like, we could have a conversation, and like, I have positive experiences at practice for the most part, which is like, I feel like I wouldn't have if I had just been that much of a workhorse. Finding that enjoyment in running is just, that's also good for longevity, you know, not just physically, but like mentally.
100%. It is. And I think while you were there and I was there, we had a dietitian. We had started having more conversations around the importance of fueling and eating carbs and things like that. Did you have any moments in college where it clicked for you how important the fueling piece was?
There would be times, or maybe I think I have a little bit of, I'm a little hypoglycemic. And there would be times at practice where I had reached my limit of fuel, and not intentionally. I think I did some things wrong in college where I wasn't eating during workouts. So no matter what I did before, I would hit my limit at the end. And I remember just like sitting on the floor of the weight room, and I was dizzy and just like weak. And I had to like chug a Gatorade, and I was like 15 minutes late to starting. And it was just this horrible feeling, and kind of embarrassing too, you know, like it and I was like, it's just like not worth this, you know, it's not worth not being able to do my next workout, you know. And I think I also, and I have my like family and mom to thank for this too, where I just get a lot of enjoyment out of food too, you know, where I love going to get ice cream, and I love a sugary latte, you know, like it just, me and my sister talk about, it's one of our like favorite authors talk about missing out on enjoyment over things that don't matter. And not to say that running doesn't matter, but I don't want to finish running and feel that I didn't enjoy myself. And I truly think that even outside of the performance benefits of, I just think I would miss out on a lot of joy that comes with food. And that probably not everyone would be able to relate to that. I know people who like food isn't their main source of joy, and that's okay. But for me anyway, that it is. And socially too, like I love going out to eat with my friends and getting brunch after runs. Like it's just, that was probably a part of having just like a healthy environment growing up and being at the lake and just having endless snacks. And yeah, I'm a foodie, I guess. Like I hang out with. I would miss out on a lot, I think, if I restricted myself.
Yeah, and it sounds like you had that kind of realization in college, sitting on the weight room floor, feeling really weak, where you were like, I don't want to feel like this, and I don't want to be missing out on things that bring me joy. And it sounds like that was maybe kind of like a turning point for you mentally to realize, like, okay, I need to do the things that make me feel my best, but also that bring me more joy.
Yeah, and working with a dietitian too is like, because I am like a type A person that needs structure and someone to like same thing working with like a sports psych, someone to say, hey, I think these are like good things you can do to make sure you're on top of your mental health. And having a dietitian was that kind of version where they told me like, I think this is a good plan for you. And like having a professional tell me you're doing it right, just like having a professional coach or having a doctor, you know, like it just kind of like solidifies those like gut feelings that you already have.
That's what half the people who come to work with me are looking for, is just reassurance that like you're doing the right thing, and just like give you that confidence. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of work when you're always like second guessing yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just someone tell you you're doing a good job.
Yeah, it goes a long way. You know, and I think that's something like you and I have talked about this a lot, like when you kind of transitioned out of college and then into professional running, it came at a very interesting time. And I don't know that I've really talked to any other guests on the podcast about this, but your collegiate career was cut short by COVID, and then your pro career start was delayed by COVID. So it was kind of came at an awkward transition time where a lot of people were like holed up with a small group of people. For some people that was good, for some people not so much. But I'm curious for you, like that transition, having that be the introduction into your transition into professional running, what was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like not gonna like sugarcoat it. It was like awful. It was not, I didn't like start imagining pro running until maybe my sophomore year or junior year of college. And then you just have this like idea and this vision of like what it's like to sign with a shoe company and to kind of like enter that world. And honestly, taking a fifth year was already something I like probably didn't want to do. I just felt really, really ready to move on and to start and to have like a new challenge. But I did feel like I had unfinished business. Outdoors, I'd only run 3 seasons, and my third season of outdoor track, I had gotten hurt and had just like a unexpected family tragedy. And I really wanted to prove myself and like kind of not even prove myself, but just see what I can do without any like big hiccups, you know? And yeah, then it got canceled anyway, so it didn't really matter. But it was a good lesson for me in like patience. And I think I waited. I had other options outside of New Balance and Team Boss that I could have taken just to get those things sooner than I did. But there were things that I know long-term that I knew that was best for me. And I'm really glad that I had the patience and the support that I had to wait until more companies were willing to sign. But, and honestly, like Team Boss and like having you guys around was like, if I had been like training on my own, that would have been so much harder. But you guys made it exciting and fun, and we raced, and time went by a little faster than it probably would have if that wasn't the case. So
yeah, lots of learning opportunities. And I think something that, again, I haven't really talked to very many athletes about, COVID was a challenging time for a lot of runners with fueling, where they kind of either like did their thing and it was fine, or they started going down maybe a not so healthy path because the idea of racing and competing was sort of put on hold. And I think for a lot of people, what motivates them to stay fueled and take care of their body is racing. And when that's taken away, a lot of athletes really struggle. And I'm curious, is that anything, did you notice any changes to your relationship with food or fueling during COVID?
It's hard to say that it was like directly related to COVID, because I was transitioning and I kind of felt like I had to do that freshman year thing all over again, where I'm like, okay, now not only am I training with people that are better than me, I'm training with like world-class athletes, and I need to take an opportunity to learn from that. And luckily I had good influences in that department, obviously. But it was also just like having to re-figure out, which I'm sure this is how people felt with COVID, like you're your schedule changes. And I went from like going to being in class all day to not having anything to do and nowhere to go, which was made worse by COVID. So I had to like re-figure out what like my eating schedule was, because it wasn't centered around school or going to, you know, for other people going to work and all of that. And my practice time changed, and all of that was like a transition. And it honestly took me longer than expected for me to manage that. So that was probably the hardest part for me. I'd say like having that support system like obviously went a long, long way, but there's still some growing pains in COVID and transitioning into a pro.
Yeah, and you had to go through both at the same time, which is just like a double whammy. And you're so right about schedules. Like I know when I'm crazy busy, I'm like, oh man, I wish I had a day where I didn't have to do anything. But it's true that on the days where you don't have to do anything, like eating is kind of the only thing you have to do. And for some reason, it's way harder to execute a schedule when the eating is not built into your day. Like when you only have like a lunch break and a couple of snack breaks between classes, and you have pre and post run, and then everyone goes to the dining hall, like it's so much easier to execute a fueling plan because you're not having to think about it and structure it as much.
Right. Yeah. And at CU, it was like, I mean, we had practice in the middle of the day, which is terrible, but I knew what I'd eat a full breakfast in the morning, and then I had to have a not super, like a big lunch, but not a heavy lunch before practice, and then a snack after practice, and then probably another snack when I get home while I'm making dinner. And then, you know, like it, and we fell into this like routine. And I also didn't realize like when you're running pro, how much you're running. And I thought I would have all this time in the world to, I'm like, I'm going to meal prep and like, make everything from scratch and be like a trad wife, essentially. For that, you know, like you run in the morning, and then I started doubling, which was a brand new thing for me too. And you lift in the middle, you know, sometime in there too, and you're napping. And I know probably to someone who has a full-time job, I sound ridiculous right now, but it's more like when I take a break from running, I realize how much energy I have. And I'm like, I realize that how I feel when I'm running 80, 85 miles a week is not normal, and give myself a little bit of a break of like, oh, no wonder you don't feel like cooking this like extravagant meal after a 12-mile workout lift and another 4 miles. Like it's just not, that's not like a reasonable expectation for me to have sometimes. And long time, like I've given myself the grace now where it's like, if I just have enough and I have, you know, I hit, and you always divide your plates, right, by like carb, protein, fat, like, you know, throw some vegetables in there for some vitamins, and we're doing great. Like, I try to, like, give myself a little more grace, because I think for a long time I was like, I'm a pro runner, I should be doing this perfectly, and it should look better than this. And it's just, sometimes it's, like, all you got, you know? Sometimes it's just, like, pre-cooked chicken sausage and some leftover pasta and a salad. Like, there's not really much to get. That's the best you can do, you know?
Yeah, and I say this all the time. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect or just, like, the fanciest meal. Like, just getting it in is the most important thing, which is definitely a hard thing to figure out, and kind of that perfectionist idea, too, and struggling a bit with the transition and fueling is all very normal. And for you, part of that transition, part of that struggle was wrapped up in a new diagnosis of hemochromatosis. So for anyone listening who doesn't know what this is, tell us a little bit about what that was like for you to go through it. What were your symptoms like that led to you kind of pursuing more diagnostic testing, and what was the treatment like?
Yeah, so the whole thing was really strange, because when I was growing up, I've been anemic in my life. So I knew what that felt like, and I knew that it was, you're tired and you just like, your legs feel like lead when you run. And I kind of started getting that feeling again. It was like what year was it? It was my first year as a pro. It was the winter of when racing started in 2021. And to make it even worse, it was New Balance Grand Prix, which is like my first, New Balance is my sponsor, and this is the big indoor meet that they put on. It's my first time running it as a New Balance athlete. And I'm on the pace for a mile, I'm feeling great, and all of a sudden I just hit this massive wall, and I end up last, and I, full disclosure, you know, pee myself and have to do like a photo shoot afterwards with like pee pants, and it's just like one of the worst days of my life, essentially. And I'm like, Joe, like, there's something wrong with me. And Joe was really, had a good coach, and he was willing to like hear that instead of dismissing me. And we start, you know, getting these tests done, and I start hammering iron because I'm like, I know, I'm like 90% sure I'm anemic because I know what this feels like. And so I'm taking the iron, I'm eating a bunch of red meat, we're at sea level, so I know that that's helping. And then I get the blood results back. It's like my total iron is like in the 200s, which isn't like insane, but then my like iron saturation is like 95%, which the normal range is like, what, like 20 to 50 or 40% or something. And my ferritin is like 100, which for me is like through the roof. Like, I've never had ferritin above like 60 or 80. It just is like red, essentially. Like, the whole thing is just like something's like not right. And I, you know, obviously we talked to someone at the USOC, and they're like, we think like this is iron overload. And I'm like, I've never struggled with this before. And I talked to my family doctor, who is my doctor at CU, and she's like, let's just like get this gene tested, which is this thing called hemochromatosis. Essentially, like, it's not like, it's like 90% of people that have it come from Irish descent or something. And it's essentially, I think essentially what it means is that like, it's one of your ancestors nearly starved and like had to start develop like, you know, some kind of protective mechanism. But I had 3 of the 4 genes, and found out that you don't normally figure this out until you're in your 50s and 60s, when your liver starts to kind of go kaput because of this like increase in iron. But, you know, as you know, running brings out all of your problems, so I figured it out pretty early. And yeah, since then I've just been having to watch it, and I spend a lot of time at altitude to try and manage it. I take supplements that are supposed to kind of like inhibit iron. Even like this spring, it wasn't like as bad as it had been when I was originally diagnosed, but even just being like slightly out of range, just wasn't finishing races the way I wanted to. I would like hit, again, like kind of hit that wall, and it's hard finding, because again, you're like trying to get 100% out of yourself, which most people don't have to find 100% physically. So it's hard to find someone or like a hematologist that understands like, no, it has to be in the perfect range, you know, and it has to be, I can't be just slightly out of whack, because it really affects my races and even like how I train. So just finding the right people has been really important to me, and managing that. It's weird to explain to people that it's like, no, I don't have too low iron. It's like too high. It's like such a rare problem for like a distance runner, especially like a female distance runner, to have. So
yeah, it's rare, but it's also not like unheard of, you know. And I think that's a really important point as to why I tell runners it's so important to get blood work done regularly. It's so important to have that data of just yourself over the years. Even if things look good in one blood test, like, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's so important to have just that consistent data. So like, at least annually for most runners, I recommend getting blood work done before each season starts. And then you bring up another super important point of like working with a sports medicine specialist who understands the performance aspect. I mean, that's a huge thing, where like, you weren't feeling good, you weren't performing well. And sometimes if you're not working with the right doctors, if they're not looking at your numbers within the specific ranges that are important for performance, you may not get the diagnosis that you need to feel better. So I think that's a super important point, is working with a specialist who knows what you're doing.
Right. And again, it's like, for the ranges are always so big, and even if you don't, if nothing is coming up and you feel great, I think just having your history is super important, because even like within my hemochromatosis and all that, like my, and I know other athletes with it. So like I say, it's rare, but I have friends and competitors who have it. But they're what is ends up feeling, you know, bad for them. Like their high iron, like their levels look different than mine. You know, like if my ferritin is what, like it'll look normal for someone else, but I know if my ferritin gets into the triple digits, like I'm in big trouble. So it's just really dependent on you and how your body is. And I mean, that's why the huge ranges exist, because everyone can be so different, but that's also why it's important to like know your history and where you have felt good running, and to not just get tested when you feel bad, but when you feel good too, because then you know what it looks like when you feel great. So
yes, that's a really important point. Everyone feels good at different points. And like for me, if my ferritin's below 50, I don't feel great. But I have some athletes who, if their ferritin's below 80, they don't feel good. And some athletes, if it's above 80, they don't feel good. So it's very individualized. And just knowing yourself and having those data points is huge. You know, and like we keep saying, working with trained professionals in performance. And speaking of, you ended up working a little bit with a dietitian. So tell us a little bit about what prompted you to reach out to a dietitian, and what are some of the things that you guys worked on together?
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to have like a dietitian in college, so I think I just understood the importance of it early on. Just as a pro, even like I've been doing this a really long time, and I've had a lot of success, but I think there's still things that I need reassurance on, and there's still, I think in my head, there's just always ways that I can improve and do better, and having a dietitian is like a big part of that. And yeah, and just working with a dietitian that understands running too has been huge, and just gives me that peace of mind that even just like mentally feeling better, I feel like goes a long way on top of like the fueling and everything.
Yeah, and just taking that sort of like second guessing yourself out of the equation, that's something that's really, I don't think a lot of athletes realize how draining that can be just mentally, and how much that can take away from your confidence when it comes to performance. If you're just not sure that what you're doing is the right thing, it's a lot harder to feel ready to compete. And maybe that's, yeah, sleep, recovery, strength training, fueling, whatever it is, just knowing that you're doing the right things and having somebody who's trained in that area to reassure you or help give you a little bit of guidance can make a really big difference. And something I talked about with Chris Lee, a strength and performance coach who came on the podcast prior, he made a really good point that you can only run so much. Everyone can only run so much, but there's other things you can do outside of running that can make a huge difference in your performance, with fueling being one of them. And I'm curious if that's anything that resonates with you.
Yeah, 100%. Because I mean, I saw someone, even like seeing a dietitian as a pro, they always, like, it's great when they say you're doing great, but then there's also like a few things, you know, here and there that they help me with. And to me, a couple big ones were electrolytes, like not doing quite enough before, you know, using it maybe a different brand that has a little more, and that, yeah, doesn't hurt your stomach and all that. And then also like the ratio of carb and protein after it's really, I feel like something I've like been the most annoyed with nutrition and like companies is that there's not a lot of good, the more I learn, the more I realize there's like no perfect protein drink or mix for endurance athletes. And maybe you can direct me to one that is perfect, but there's never one with like enough protein and carbs and that tastes good. And that, like, I'm not a big fan of stevia, and there's just like, so honestly, like I've kind of just gone back to chocolate milk, if I'm being honest. Yeah. That seems to have, and when I was doing protein, I would have to do the protein with a juice or with another snack to get more carbs in. And I just, yeah, I've struggled to like see the point of a powder or like a protein powder if it just doesn't even have what I need, and it's more expensive than a chocolate milk. So those were really helpful for me. And there's always something that, even if it's something small, that I feel like goes a long way.
So After kind of going through some ups and downs throughout the last few years of your pro career, you've had some really great races, but I know, you've kind of expressed you haven't been super happy with your performance. You made some big changes. You moved, you got new coaches, and something we've talked about a lot is the importance of happiness and life balance outside of running. So any words of wisdom to anyone who's listening that might help someone who feels stuck or like they need a change?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I got this advice as a high school athlete, and I give it to athletes going to college, and then but it also just like continues on throughout your whole life, where you have to have balance and stuff that you love outside of running, because it's not, or even anything, your job or your relationship, one singular thing. You have to have other things, because there's always going to be bumps in the road, and especially something like professional running, where you're coming up against, some of the best people in the world, the most talented people in the world. You're not always going to get what you want. And I do just like, I dislike that narrative of like, if you just work hard, you'll get everything, all the goals you are after. And there's obviously a ton of truth in like, the harder you work, the more likely you are to achieve those things. But especially if, someone like me, I just have really big goals, and that's good to have, but you have to, be willing to accept that you're not always going to reach every goal that you go after, and there's always going to be something else that you want. And so I think, and now I'm dealing with this, that too, of like, I've decided to go back to school and find some other things outside of running, and surround myself with people that you, and I've always done that, surround myself with people that I enjoy being with. And now I'm closer to family, which I've realized as I've gotten older is important to me. And just having balance, and like the team that I train with now, they all have jobs and they all go to school. And I think that's a push that I've needed to add something to my life and to start kind of gearing up for life after sport. And yeah, it just helps you get through when running isn't going well, which for someone who's high achieving is going to be often, it's, you don't always get, everything you want. And I do think there's a lot of people hate when I say this, but I do think there's a lot of luck in success and running, and I've had a lot of it. I've had good coaches and good influences and good teammates, and I've had my health, and I've had supportive parents that take me to practice every day, and those are like God-given things. That's not something that I had control over, but that's contributed to my success, and I can only do the best with what you've got. And I try to control my controllables, and I can control my happiness as well with adding more to my life.
I don't think it dismisses hard work to say that there is a certain amount of luck involved in success at the professional level. Everybody is working insanely hard. It is everybody's dream, everybody's goal to make a team, to make, USAs, to run a PR, to do all these incredible things, but only a small handful of people do them. And not the same people do them every year. And there really is just that, like, things have to come together at the right time, and it's so special and incredible when it does, but it's so, so rare. And so you can't live your whole life or spend your whole career just like only living for those moments. You have to find those things in between. And it sounds like for you, prioritizing life outside of running, happiness, family, friends, like those are things that bring you joy and help that process be overall more enjoyable, regardless of the outcome.
Yeah, and I think like going back to my college year, like I'd say I had a lot more success in college than I have as had as a pro. And I was very, it's not like I was just getting through classes, I was a double major, and I got good grades, and I was involved in every club I could be in. And I think sometimes as a pro, you get wrapped up in like, I have to do everything perfectly, and I can't have a distraction, and I can't do other things that I love or start my next chapter. And I don't know. That's probably true for for some people, and that's totally fine. But I'm starting to think that that's not true for me. And again, it's like I'm 5 years into pro running, and I'm still like learning things about myself and what's working. So, and that goes with nutrition and everything else. So.
Yeah. And I think an important takeaway from that too is like if you're frustrated with performance, it's easy to think losing weight or eating less is going to be an easy fix because it's an easy fix. It's an easy thing to change. Whereas most of the time, it's something completely separate, like mental health, life happiness, other things, stress going on outside of running that take a lot more time and effort to fix. And I think that takes away from the sport and from nutrition when you just automatically assume, oh, I don't feel great. Oh, I'm not happy with my performance. Let me just try this super quick magic bullet, quote unquote, fix that kind of sends you down the spiral. So I really admire the fact that you're looking for sustainable things to change and you're looking at yourself as a whole person, not just as the athlete. You're looking at your overall health and happiness, which is obviously the biggest part of who you are as an athlete and beyond.
Right. And like sometimes the solution is even just like patience, which I don't have a lot of, and I'm also not part of it too. Like it's years of sometimes it's like you need years of cumulative work to get the big payout. And yeah, I'm trying to deal with my own stubbornness and impatience to give myself that opportunity to give myself a couple more years to see what I got, you know.
Yeah, it's hard. Patience is hard. And I think runners in general, we're such like type A, high achieving people that we just don't naturally have that patience, longevity picture. It's we want success now. I'm doing the work now. Where is my success? And it does. It takes time. It takes accumulation. And I think like having that balance just makes it easier to have patience because you have other things to focus on. And something you're also doing that's really incredible is you're giving back to the sport. You are starting a girls camp in Ann Arbor in the Michigan area. Tell us a little bit about what this camp is and why you decided to start it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a really long time, when I started running, I always had that goal of just doing something that I just felt like the sport has obviously given me so much, and honestly, like my family so much that, yeah, I just wanted to like to give something back. And I selfishly, I think I would love to be a coach, for like younger people when I'm older. I'd love to have like a youth group or like a club team.
So
And
selfish of you.
yeah, how dare I? But this is kind of like a way of me to like transition into that and like kind of start that process, I guess, and start, you know, getting involved in the community in a small way. I'm obviously still competing, so it's hard for me to have like a full team. But yeah, I wanted to do it in Boulder originally, and Boulder is just such a
It's a saturated market.
Yes, and it's really is like running is just really established. It's like a running capital of the world in my mind, and so I realized that that wasn't necessarily true for where I live now, and I felt it was more needed in Ann Arbor. And so yeah, we're starting with just something really, really small, but I'm hoping that it's small but mighty. You know, I would have loved to have you there. But we have a local dietitian coming to talk with the girls, and we're doing, you know, a panel on college running, which I trained with two really impressive girls that both ran D1, and they'll be out there to help support. And yeah, it's mostly just going to be games and a little bit of running, but mostly hopefully just fun. And I'm hoping even next year it's a little bigger and a little longer, and we can just, yeah, kind of get the ball rolling with it. But yeah, I'm really excited, and I think we already have about 20, 25 girls signed up, which I'm really
Wow.
excited about. And yeah, it should be a great time. So
That's so fun. And sign up is still open, right?
yeah, there's 2 more weeks. I think it's a 2-day thing on Friday and Saturday, 2 weeks from now. Just in town, and yeah, but we'll have registration open all the way up until the meeting point, and yeah, there's still time to sign up. So, and the link is on my Instagram.
I'll put the sign up link in the show notes for this podcast as well. So if you're interested, you can go check it out. Danny is just such an incredible athlete in person. If you're a young runner in the Ann Arbor area, I highly recommend checking out this awesome resource that she's putting together.
Oh, thanks, Maddie. Yeah,
Yeah.
best.
Awesome. Well, before we get to our rapid fire questions, any last kind of thoughts on, fueling, longevity, and sport that you wish young Danny would have known, or messages that you wish that she would have heard?
I just think like my coach, I like always come back to it. Like Coach Billy, your Coach Billy Nelson said something when I think I was like on a visit even. I wasn't even his athlete yet. And he said, if you're craving it, you probably need it. And whenever I have an instinct to shame myself or not eat something, I think of that. And I mean, I just feel like your instincts are really good. And I try to remind myself that you're probably doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's such good advice. And I know it can be hard to remember in the moment, but I always say this, your body's not trying to trick you. If it wants something, it's going to tell you. We just have to learn how to listen to it. So, really
Yeah.
good insight.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. We're going to wrap up with our fun rapid fire questions. I promise these aren't super hard. the first one is, what is your go-to pre-run snack?
Ooh, it is I am not an easygoing gal. I go for the full toaster waffles. I just don't get sick of them. And I've realized that two toaster waffles are enough. I do two toaster waffles, a banana, a cup of coffee, and a glass of electrolytes.
Amazing.
Which when you're racing overseas is not an easy thing. Switch to bagel, I guess, when we're traveling.
And Danny has been known to travel with a waffle iron.
I did until I took it that one time and it was like overheating and that like was burning everything I was making, and then I just like fried the waffle maker, and I was like, oh crap.
That's so sad. RIP mini waffle maker. what would you pick for your quote unquote last meal?
Oh, we were just talking about that, me and some friends the other day. I think I would just have breakfast. Like, I don't, I've always been that way where I'm like, I have to have a full breakfast in the morning. I think I would do, the whole thing, like pancakes, bacon, a really good cup of coffee. And if not that, just ice cream, probably.
Perfect.
Yeah.
My two favorite things, honestly. I think I know the answer to this one, but what is your favorite dessert?
Yeah, ice cream. I just, yeah.
Yep, ice
And
cream, join the
obviously,
club.
like chocolate, though, anything chocolate. Yeah, I'm not a huge candy person. I'm a big chocolate, cakes, cookies, pastries person. So.
Yes. And every year at training camp, we would always be there over my birthday, and someone would send me a dozen cupcakes. And Danny and I were always roommates. And so we always had a really fun week of eating cupcakes every night.
Wow, your birthday was the best day of the year.
good times. I miss those cupcakes. what is your least favorite food?
Ooh, least favorite food. I'm realizing, especially the more I've like traveled for racing, like I'm a bad American for saying this probably, but I don't like ketchup. Like I'm really not a ketchup person.
Yeah.
I'll eat any other, I'm a big mustard girl, but yeah, ketchup I'm just not a fan of. That's not even
Yeah.
like food.
I mean, that's what Lottie said last week. Lottie was on and she said the same thing. She doesn't like ketchup or mayo.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I just like I'm not a picky. I'll eat most anything. That's like my biggest. Yeah, that's like kind of the only thing that I don't really like, honestly.
That's okay. That's easy to avoid. if you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
Oh man, I really love like any Mediterranean food. Like I love hummus. I love pita, and like so anywhere I could find the best of that. I guess I'm ignorant for not even knowing where exactly I should go for that, but I could eat that kind of food every night for dinner.
I mean, lots of amazing options for traveling in the Mediterranean. So I think you can't go wrong there.
Is also not the worst place to go, so
Yeah. So good. What is your go-to lazy meal?
Lazy meal. Gosh, I eat a ton of sweet potatoes and I always have them around. Yeah, anything with potato, that's just kind of like the Midwesterner coming out in me, like potatoes. I love like salads are easy and it's my favorite way to eat vegetables anyway. But yeah, I always like cook a potato and like throw some fish in and have like a little salad on the side. That's like my, yeah, but
Easy. And last question, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink?
oh, do not drink tea. That's not
Sometimes you drink sleepy time when I make it for you
that's literally the
at
only
training
time
camp.
I drink tea is when I'm with you and Nick. That's the only time. And because you guys make it so good, like you make it look so good. And I'm like, I want to be cozy too. No, I don't. Yeah, no, I don't drink a lot of tea.
Okay.
Yeah, coffee in the summer, an iced latte, and in the winter, a flat white, and always just with like whole milk. I really hate when you go to coffee shops now and they're like, you want cow's milk? And I'm like, why do you have to say it like that? Like, that's like normal drink. Like, when
Yeah.
did oat milk become the normal thing?
Agreed. I will always do a cappuccino with whole milk. That's my all-time favorite. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Danny, for coming on the podcast. If people want to keep up with you, where can they find you?
I have an Instagram and that's about it. I don't really,
Perfect.
I can't handle it
Easy.
more than that. So,
Agreed. Yeah. Perfect. Well, you can find Danny on Instagram and I'll put the link to register for her camp if you're interested in the show notes. Thanks so much, Danny. We'll be cheering for you this upcoming season.
oh, thanks, Maddie. I'm glad I could finally get on. It's a great excuse to chat for a while.
2 days in a row. I feel so lucky.
I know, me too.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Dani, you can find her on Instagram at Dani Jones, and you can find the link to register for her camp in the show notes. Next week will be a Q&A with me, so if you'd like to submit a question to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.